This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Our hearing is one of our most critical senses. It's essential for spoken language learning, for communication and social interaction, and even for survival. So if you take your ears for granted, please listen to this. Hearing loss is the third most common health problem in the United States, and it's on the rise. We'll hear with more on this as Dr. Brian Nicholas. He's an assistant professor of otolaryngology and communication sciences at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Nicholas. Thanks for coming.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So we shouldn't take our hearing for granted, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
It's crucial for life, right?
There's no question about that. You know, I think when you think about hearing loss in children, it's crucial for our speech and language development. I think there have been big studies looking at children who have hearing deficits and their own failure to develop speech and language at a way that's commensurate with other children their age.
And it affects their cognitive development. I mean, language
absolutely.
Is basically
absolutely.
The symbolic system that we use to be able to think.
That's
and
right.
reason.
And that's right.
So it's really kind of the basis of the, it's the core for human communication. It's also the core way that with language that we communicate with others and have social relationships.
Absolutely, and we see that in the adult population. You mentioned at the outset that hearing loss is increasing in incidence. And as the population sort of ages, hearing loss is on the rise. What we see in those adult populations tends to be isolation. Because communication tends to suffer.
It's interrupted.
Sure.
So let's make a distinction here between hearing loss in childhood. Mm-hmm. What are the kinds of things that cause it in childhood?
Well, there's lots of things that can cause hearing loss in child. And, one of the things that I hear a lot of from patients is this something that runs in our family? Is this something that's genetic? And when we think of childhood hearing loss, we usually it's congenital, which all that means is they were born with it. It doesn't imply that it was hereditary, though it can be. If it's congenital, it can be either hereditary or acquired at the time of birth, for instance, from an infection either before or during or after birth. Usually that hearing loss is picked up. The state of New York, as do all states at this point, have newborn hearing screenings, and the state of New York was one of the first and remains one of the very best at doing that. Rarely is there an identifiable genetic cause of hearing loss, though there are a few tests that we can do that can elicit that.
But the truth is that, as you said earlier, and we've been saying, it is really such a powerful force in their lives that requires all kinds of intervention, whether it be hearing aids and then early intervention with language development therapy and all that. But I wanted to focus today a bit more on the one that's so-called on the rise, maybe because the population is aging mm-hmm. and living longer, mm-hmm. and that's what we call the hearing loss of age. Is that also known as presbycusis?
That's right. Yeah, presbycusis, which is, just like you said, age-related hearing loss. And it is on the rise, probably because the demographics of our population has sort of shifted somewhat. It's exquisitely common, and one of the hallmarks of that audiometrically that we see on a hearing test or an audiogram is really high-frequency hearing loss. So the low frequencies seem to be okay, but as you get into the mid and high frequencies, the hearing trails off.
So certain types of sounds, I know things like S's and F's are produced in a high frequency way, and that prevents mm-hmm. people from understanding language. It becomes a little bit more muddled what they hear.
That's right, yeah. Our speech is made up of a whole series of vowels and consonants, and there are different frequency characteristics of each of those. One example I'll give you is somebody who might have high frequency hearing loss will not be able to tell the difference between the words while and wife and wise. What they'll hear is why. They're not hearing the back end of that because that tends to be slightly more high pitched than is the rest of the word.
I read somewhere that one out of three people aged 65 to 74 have some level of hearing loss. That's astounding.
Yeah, and I think that's a conservative estimate. I think it's probably more than that because of how unrecognized hearing loss tends to be, especially in older populations. we typically see it manifest mostly with isolation. And unfortunately, these are folks who, as they become more isolated, tend to be less likely to seek medical care and to have formal hearing tests. So yes, it is a big problem and one that's probably under-recognized.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Brian Nicholas, and we're talking about hearing loss in adults and what can be done about it. So I want to get back to this idea of, besides obviously the natural course of events, and they don't always understand as you age why you lose hearing, how about things like noise exposure? It seems that in this world today, there are so many things that are making noise all the time.
Yes. Mostly age-related hearing loss is due to a loss of hair cells within the organ of hearing, the cochlea. And in mammals, once those hair cells are lost, they don't come back. We know that in certain bird species, that's not true. And most of the research into hearing restoration is aimed at hair cell regeneration based on what we see in bird populations. But you mentioned noise, and noise tends to damage the hair cells in the same way that aging does. And if you were to look at an aged cochlea or organ of hearing and compare that to a young one that was exposed to high levels of noise, they would look nearly identical. Hair cell loss.
Yeah. Hair cell loss. So hair cells are these little cells within the cochlea.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
So the whole idea of people walking around with their earbuds blasting their iPods is problematic.
So noise is a huge issue, and there's a great deal of research right now looking at safe levels of noise. Good studies were done in the 1970s and 1980s that were commissioned by OSHA, actually looking at safe levels of sound for workers. And generally speaking, 80 to 90 decibels and below is considered safe levels. As you go above 90 decibels, that's an unsafe amount of sound. And the louder you go, the less time it takes for your cochlea to be damaged.
So it's really important to be aware of that in your daily life, to try to avoid noise exposure much as possible.
There's no question. We see it either from gunfire, we see it from use of heavy machinery, we see it from loud music, and that's one that's specifically on the rise because of the popularity of personal listening devices, iPods and so forth, where people just constantly have earbuds in. Unfortunately, the volume levels on some of these devices are not at safe levels.
They're not regulated
in
that way.
So there's the potential for significant noise-related hearing loss. And one thing we know is it tends to snowball. So for people who have damaged cochleas from noise, they tend to be ones that have even worse hearing as they age because there's an additive effect that goes along
About certain other illnesses that can cause hearing loss? What are some of the things that contribute?
Well, there are lots of different diseases that can lead to hearing loss, one of which is Meniere's disease, of course. Meniere's disease is primarily a disease of the inner ear, that is the cochlea, as well as the balance organs. There are balance canals, very near the cochlea within the inner ear. And we think that there's probably some mixture of the fluids of the inner ear that leads to usually low-frequency hearing loss, but it can progress over time, and severe episodes of room-spinning vertigo. And that's really the hallmark
of the Meniere's.
Of Meniere's disease. That's
How about something like otosclerosis? I've heard that thrown around. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, otosclerosis is a different process than Meniere's disease. Many of these have sort of hallmark appearances on audiometry. So when a hearing professional, like an audiologist or an otologist like myself, looks at an audiogram, there are patterns of hearing loss that are characteristic of a certain disease process. For instance, I mentioned low-frequency hearing loss is very characteristic of Meniere's. Well, typically, that's inner ear-type hearing loss, and we can tell that on an audiogram. Otosclerosis is different in that we call that a conductive hearing loss. And again, we can tell that on a hearing test or an audiogram. Otosclerosis is basically a stiffening of one of the three bones of hearing that sit behind the eardrum. And what happens is that third bone usually tends to get a little stiff, and it doesn't conduct sound to the inner ear the way it once did.
Let's get to treatments, because mm-hmm. I really don't want to run out of time. Mm-hmm. What are the main treatments these days for hearing loss? I know we've had some pretty big breakthroughs. I mean, before we actually sat down here, right. you mentioned cochlear implants. Mm-hmm. That's so exciting. Tell me about that.
Right. So as far as what we can do for hearing loss, it really does depend on the type of hearing loss and whether that's conductive hearing loss or whether that's an inner ear or sensory neural type hearing loss. Generally speaking, conductive hearing losses are ones that are correctable, either with procedures in the office or procedures in the operating room. Sensory neural hearing loss classically was described...
That's where the inner ear is
involved.
That's
exactly right, yeah. Was one that is not correctable. And those patients are often relegated to amplification devices.
Like a hearing aid.
Exactly, yep. Cochlear implantation is specifically designed for people who have severe or profound bilateral hearing loss.
Do they actually put a device within the ear?
Yep. So there are two components to a cochlear implantation. One of them is implanted at the time of surgery and goes into the cochlea, and the other sits outside on the skin, and you'd wear it like a hearing aid. But it's amazing technology and gives people who otherwise have no means of communication new ears, if you will.
Wow.
So it really is fantastic.
And that's being done pretty routinely these
exactly
days?
Exactly right. Yeah, we do that for patients who have age-related hearing loss, and we do it for little babies who are born without any hearing at all. So it really does run the gamut.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, in my old life, I was involved in this field, and nothing like that was available. So that's very, very exciting to
it
hear.
Is.
Very
yeah,
hopeful for these patients. I want to thank you so much for coming in with all this wonderful information. My guest has been Dr. Brian Nicholas. He's Assistant Professor of Otolaryngology and Communication Sciences at Upstate Medical University. And once again, hearing loss is on the rise, but there's hope out there. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.